this Tuesday edition of the Hagmann Report. We are going to be joined by Stan Deo in just a moment. Want to just hit a few pieces of news. I don't know how many people saw the View on, I believe it was Friday, where the Joy Behar celebrated, loud standing up and clapping the fact that she read the ABC report that Mueller was going to testify against Trump, bringing down the Trump presidency. Well,
that would be Flynn.
Flynn, what did I say?
Mueller.
I'm all over the place today. Anyway, they had to issue an apology and retract what they were celebrating, and it's an interesting piece. You can find that up on the Daily Wire, but it's odd when you see these people actually coming out and apologizing for reporting or misreporting.
It wasn't even an apology.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was an insult to the American public.
And they further went on to say, yes, we want to get Donald Trump. We want to see him as president.
Of course. But you know, I have to ask the question, because we just had Jake Morpheus on. I have to ask the question. I don't believe much happens by accident or coincidence. Contextualize the Las Vegas mass shooting at that moment in history. Is there any connection to what's going on through? In other words, Fast and Furious happened on, and the exposure of Fast and Furious happened on Obama's watch, of course, that being a subset of the larger Operation Wide Receiver. But all of that said, is there any connection, contextual connection to Donald Trump, his presidency, and the mass shooting in Las Vegas? I ask that only, I ask it because I want to know. But here's one more thing, Joe, I want to mention. I mentioned this on my morning show today, and I did play that audio clip of that video from Joy Behar, mm-hmm. Yesterday, I believe it was. But here's what I want to say to the listeners and viewers. All of these investigations, these separate investigations, whether it's about Mueller or the Awans or Las Vegas, or you insert the topic here, this takes a lot of time to go through all of this information, to vet it, to categorize it, to map it out. And believe me, you've got to map it out. So forgive us if we are not... we operate 5 hours of radio per day, and radio and television, four a piece. So this takes a lot of time. So we're doing our level best and to get all of this information. And you want news and information about events like Las Vegas. You want it to be accurate. You want it to be timely, but you also want it to be accurate. And this is what we're trying to do. And I just want to extend my thanks. Let you know that, you know, all of this, it's very time consuming, even more than time sensitive. So we're going to have Jake back on, and we're going to be talking with him and working with others as well, because this is what we do, work with others to assemble the facts and information so we can bring it to you as an original investigative work product. Go ahead, Joe.
And the information is out there. It just needs to be found. And we can't let this investigation into what really happened in Las Vegas go until we get the answers that we deserve. With that, we are going to bring on Mr. Stan Deo. His website is standeo.com. Click on the show images page on the right-hand side of the microphone on his website. There you can follow along with everything he's put together to talk about on the show. Stan, it's great to have you back. I'm told that you have to turn on your video, that your video is not turned on at the moment.
Oh, it wasn't that clever planning.
Well, it's great to have you back, Stan. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the news. There we go. It's great to see you as always.
Hey, you're not in your pajamas. Joe said you were.
Well, I raced up and got them changed real quick. Hey, how come I'm so pink on your TV screen? Am I pink on yours?
Yeah, yeah. And we're pale.
Stan, I get like five shades paler on video, so...
I think Eric the Tech has got some nefarious agenda to make us look bad. I can't prove that, but
probably.
All right. Well, I'm not really sunburned. I kind of look like normal pale skin, but anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, you look fabulous nonetheless. You could be green and you'd still look good compared to us.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you. Where to start?
Well, there are a lot of things to look at here today. Just trying to figure out which ones grab me the most. Well, image 47 on Pope Francis, if we get to that. He's actually saying that the United States needs to be put under a world government. Basically, he's saying that we, we're causing trouble by wanting to be kind of reserved from the rest of the world. In other words, when we try to keep illegal immigrants out, we're acting against what he wants the world to do. He's named several other countries. If you go click on that link, he's getting after not only us, but Russia, China, North Korea, and Russia and Assad in the war in Syria, saying that we're all creating migrants that we shouldn't be, that we're endangering these poor people. And, look, I'm for a world government as long as the good Lord, Yeshua, Jesus, is running it, because he knows how to do that kind of stuff, and he's trustworthy. He has no agenda. But that doesn't occur right now. We don't have him here, and so to put the world powers in charge of the United States and all the rest of the nations of the world, it's not, kind of high on my agenda. I don't agree to that. And so I'm with President Trump and saying, okay, let's put the walls up. Let's screen the people we let in. And we're entitled to do that as a nation. So I'm in disagreement with the Pope here, but to see him put this in print, wow. It's astounding. Anyway.
It's amazing how the Pope continues to interject himself into matters of even domestic U.S. politics, from immigration now to how we should be governed. This is one of the most progressive popes that I can ever remember, on the wrong side of everything, including the Bible. And I guess what do you expect from somebody who is basically a social justice warrior
and a Jesuit?
Yeah, and a Jesuit.
The Jesuits have never liked the evangelical Christian movements at all. Their objective worldwide is to bring all these renegade evangelist movements back into the fold at the Vatican. And, you know my position on the Vatican anyway, but this is not what we need to be doing. So, go ahead, sorry.
No, you're right. And while we're talking about religion and the Vatican, let's jump right into tomorrow, the possibility of Trump naming Jerusalem the capital of Israel and announcing that the embassy might be moving to Tel Aviv. This is something that we've been talking about with you, Stan, for a number of months since Trump has been inaugurated, and it looks like it might happen. There are just questions as to how it's going to happen. Some are saying that he's going to sign some kind of mandate delaying it after announcing it, and others are worried that he's going to announce it tomorrow and, cause a huge amount of backlash. So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, in slide 46, I have a link to a short video made by the mayor of Jerusalem, which is actually making a final plea to President Trump to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Now, whether that will have effect on what President Trump does tomorrow, I don't know. President Trump can recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and that in itself will cause a great deal of problem between the Palestinians, the Israelis, and the United States, because that would in fact give more substance to the Israeli side of the Palestinian conflict and the peaceful resolution of it. Now, as you know, President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been over there in the Middle East, all over the place, trying to negotiate a peace settlement between the Arab nations and Israel and Palestine. Now, Palestine can't be a signatory to that, but they've offered them, the Palestinians, a way to have residency in other Arab countries, but not Israel, if they want to move out of there. So if President Trump says, okay, I recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, if he does that, the Palestinians say they're going to instantly throw a monkey wrench in all peace negotiations, and they will step up attacks on various places, I think including the United States forces. So President Trump can announce he's going to move the embassy from Tel Aviv down to Jerusalem, and he can get away with that perhaps on a delayed do-it type schedule. But even that, we think, will cause the Palestinians to revolt and make a lot of trouble in the Middle East. We still haven't seen the promoting of Prince Mohammed bin Salman to king or to virtual ruler of Saudi Arabia, and his father, the king, stepping aside.
I thought they announced that, Stan. I thought they announced that a few weeks ago, that the king was going to step down and his son, Mohammed bin Salman, was going to take over. I thought they announced that in the middle of November.
Well, they announced it was supposed to happen last week. It hasn't happened yet. Now, this is fairly important in studying prophecy over there. Does Prince bin Salman ratify a covenant with Israel and the Arab nations around it as a prince or as a king? And the way the transfer of power is being billed, let me just do that for you there, whoops, is being billed, is that King Salman will be the entitled, titular head, the king of Saudi Arabia and the guardian of the two mosques. But his son will rule the country, but not as a full-fledged king until King Salman dies. So, who knows? The whole area over there is a mess. And I would like to see Israel unified. I would like to see that Jerusalem stays an Israeli city instead of a world city, but that's what the United Nations and other people are pushing for, is to make Jerusalem nobody's city, an international city with no part being in Israel. And if that happens, of course, then governing of it and administering who sits on what property is going to be a nightmare, even more so than now. So I don't know what President Trump's going to do. It's between a rock and a hard place. I support the move to Jerusalem of the embassy, and I support the move to make Jerusalem the capital of Israel, but not an international city. You know, taking it out of the hands of Israel. That's just
right.
That kind of division is just madness.
Yeah, and the latest on this says tomorrow Trump to declare Jerusalem capital of Israel on Wednesday, according to White House officials, and the president will also sign a 6-month waiver of a 1995 law mandating an embassy move, thereby keeping the U.S. embassy in Tel Aviv for the time being as he initiates the process of relocating the embassy, a process that is expected to take years and will include a survey of construction sites and a search for contractors. Until the new embassy in Jerusalem opens, current law requires the president to sign the waiver that maintains the embassy in Tel Aviv. So whether or not it looks like that this is just step one in getting the ball rolling to get the actual embassy moved, and that it will be recognized as in Jerusalem, but it could take years to get the physical building erected and opened there in Jerusalem.
Right. You know, in addition to what I've just said about Jared Kushner and Mohammed bin Salman, look at slide 51. You'll see a picture of bin Salman and Kushner and a few others there, including Tillerson, it looks like. But if you read the article, click on that and read the article, you scan down a bit here, and they are trying to, I'm just trying to find where they've got funding of tens of billions of dollars, there it is. The major goal of discussions between the pair, that's Kushner and bin Salman, is, as the account suggests, an historic agreement featuring the creation of a Palestinian state or territory backed financially by a number of countries, including Saudi Arabia, which could put tens of billions of dollars toward the effort. Now, the first part of that paragraph there, it's featuring the creation of a Palestinian state or territory. So maybe if it could be a territory instead of a state, that would limit its attempts to divide Israel any further. I don't know. But, you know, Kushner is not making public what he's doing over there on the peace treaty. And, of course, President Trump now making decisions tomorrow and announcing them that will probably aggravate this treaty or this agreement with the Palestinians and the Arab nations in Israel. It'll aggravate that to the point that it collapses. So apparently what President Trump is doing is going to stalemate what Jared Kushner and MBS are trying to do over there. So I don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to be a very interesting week.
Yeah, on the right-hand side of that report about Kushner and Ben Solomon discussing a Saudi-funded Palestinian state, there are other articles that talk about the as you said, the plans of other people in there trying to make sure that that doesn't happen and what that would look like and do to the region. And as you said, one of the last times you were on, maybe two or three times before that, about the military alliance that Saudi Arabia is setting up. And we see this continuing, tension between Iran and Saudi Arabia and what has happened in Yemen as a former, prime minister was assassinated. And that region seems to be destabilizing. Do you know, Stan, that military alliance that you talked about, if there was a conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran, that military alliance would be mobilized?
They've already done test mobilizations with 34 of the nations gathering troops and armaments together and having exercises earlier this year. So, yeah, I do think that it'll mobilize against the Iranians, who are Shiite-based versus the Sunni-based and Wahhabi-based Saudis. So, yeah, this is a real clear and present danger to Iran. I think Jordan would probably side at this point with Iran. But I wouldn't swear to it. The Jordanians are still having an argument with Israel over a big water project. In fact, that's an interesting thing. Let me just click on that and see which thing that is. That would be, yeah, go up to slide 56 at the top, and you'll see. Let's see if I can get down to those pictures there too. Yeah, it's taking a while to load. If you go to the, I tell you what, if you just, the text under that picture will take you to the main website where the story is, but it takes a while for it to load in. So while you're doing that to read the article, I'm going to click on the, yes, come on, let me have the computer.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map, Stan.
That's where I was going with the map. I see it on your screen now. Well, what this project, if you, is that the icon or the picture I've got?
The picture.
Okay. I need to get that up here on mine, so I'm trying to get to do it. Come on.
Well, it says this is the proposed Red Sea, Dead Sea pipeline. And is this an oil pipeline?
Saltwater pipeline from down there at the lower left of your screen. You see where it says Aqaba. That's at the tail end of the Gulf of Aqaba, which springs off of the Red Sea. It's salty water, right? So the Israelis are building a joint project with Jordan. And there's argument now between Jordan and the Israelis about, where the water goes, how much goes to which side. And what is happening, the Israelis are building a desalinization plant at Aqaba, because the Israelis are very advanced in desalinating seawater. So they're going to desalinate, millions of gallons of water. And when they do that, the fresh water, you'll see at the top, the light blue arrow goes to Jordan, to Amman, giving them so many million cubic feet of fresh water per year. The dark blue arrow at the top there is salt water going into the Dead Sea. Now, crazy as it may sound, what the Israelis and the Jordanians want to do is they want to pump the Dead Sea back up because it's been losing about 3.3 feet of shoreline a year now. It's evaporating and just getting very concentrated. And pretty soon, even the guests of Israel can walk on water there at the Dead Sea because it'll be so salty they'll float on their feet. But that's one of the reasons that this pipeline has been set up, is to keep the Dead Sea full of the salty water. And the process that the Israelis are using is probably an osmotic process, as I recall, because the process generates a lot of very concentrated brine or salt water, which goes into the Dead Sea, where it also produces fresh water to go to the right to Amman. Now, the article that that you get to when you press the text link does... Oh, gosh.
Where it's it? It's Jordan. It's titled Jordan, Israel Agree $900 Million Red Dead Sea Project.
Yeah, when I clicked on it, I got into some kind of an article. I don't know how the browser did that on weapons and things. But, yeah, that $900 million project, if you go down the article... Yeah, it says it'll take them 3 years to complete. Now, they started in 2015, so it should be completed next year, I think. But what I don't understand is if you go down to about the fourth or fifth paragraph, it says the desalinization plant, go down a bit, there you go. The desalinization plant will produce at least 80 million cubic meters annually. Israel will buy at a cost up to 40 million cubic meters. Now, does that mean that they're getting fresh water, 40 million cubic meters, or is that the salt water? And the rest of it goes over to the Aqaba plant, which goes to, you know, I guess, to Amman. Now, they said in the next paragraph, the pipeline will pump 300 million cubic meters annually of Red Sea water to the Dead Sea. So there must be another arrow they didn't put on the map showing that Israel will get 40 million cubic meters of fresh water, and they'll dump X known amount of salt water into the Dead Sea there. But anyway, it's not clear in the article, as you can see, and it kind of puzzled me. But it does tell you about the recession of the... okay, wait a minute. Under the agreement, Nasser said Israel would also release 50 million cubic meters more water from the Sea of Galilee, its largest reservoir, to Jordan. That's right. I remember that. Where the Sea of Galilee is, you know, here, and Israel, I'm trying to make it for you, look at the map, Sea of Galilee, and Israel's down here. Well, the Sea of Galilee shares, right up on the upper northeast corner, but shares a border with Jordan. And for years, the Jordanians and the Israelis have had an agreement so that a certain amount of the fresh water coming out of, you know, various resources up in the Golan Heights, that area, the rainfall stuff, that a certain amount of it can go into the Galilee or into the fresh water feeds for Israel, and the rest of it goes to northern Jordan. So this agreement even covers that. And water in the Middle East is growing to be more precious than gold or oil. So this is a very important situation between Jordan and Israel. Now, the Israelis are really wanting to pull out of the deal if the Jordanians don't reopen the Israeli embassy there in Jordan after, you know, a time with prosecuting the guards so that the assassination of that young soldier occur over there. Anyway, it's a political effort, and it's just adding to the conflict in the Middle East. Not good at all.
And it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds over there. I've asked several people that we've had on as guests and otherwise, and asked them about the inevitability of the potential for war, and many agree that it's just a matter of if, not when. Same thing with North Korea. In the United States, they believe that will end in military conflict. But what's happening in the Middle East seems like it could happen at a much faster rate. Now, there are questions, Stan, and I think we talked about this one of the last times you were on, but the anti-corruption sweeps in Saudi Arabia, it's since come out that Blackwater mercenaries are torturing some of the Saudi princes and trying to extract information. Have you heard about that? And if so, what do you make of that? What are they getting at?
Well, I have heard of it, read several articles on it, and some of them were for the were from Arab news centers, which I kind of so treat as true. But it wouldn't surprise me, because Blackwater does have experienced interrogators in the region, and MBS could certainly afford them. And as part of the joint cooperation with the United States over a number of issues, I think that you know, they would allow Blackwater to supply the interrogators. I mean, young Prince Bin Salman, MBS, has gained, I think, $50 billion from assets taken from these people who were part of the corruption, or who admitted to being part of the corruption through the interrogation. In total, they've paid $50 billion to get released. Now, there's still more prisoners there being interrogated, and this might be to give them information on any treasonous, Arabic treasonous acts they performed against maybe Saudi Arabia in conjunction with Iran. You know, if they were traitors, if they were pro-Shiite, they had anything to do with terrorist cells. There are just a number of these things that could be being released by the Blackwater interrogation. Not that we'll hear much of it, but yeah, I do think it's possible and probably did happen. So, and is happening.
Consolidation of power, weeding out anybody who could be in opposition to the, to Ben Solomon, as well as taking away the resources that they would use to try to, you know, come against him. And it's amazing to watch, to see how this is happening, and to confiscate the wealth, I guess, is a, if you're him, it's a pretty smart move. I just wonder how that will affect, I think, who is it, the Al-Waheed and all his holdings in different U.S. companies, including Fox News, how that will be affected. And I wonder, do you think these resources are going to be applied to the, building the new cities that you talked about, or to, just to keep it out of the hands of those who could oppose him?
I think it will contribute to a number of plans that young MBS has, and certainly amongst them will be gaining more resources to fuel his new Saudi economy, you know, for Operation 2030. And that city, NEOM, of course, is one of the big budget deals, and I don't see that he's going to raise $500 billion to build that by himself. So it's going to be an effort that will entertain investment from corporations and countries, I think. So at $50 billion, I don't know whether he will, if he gets any interest in Fox News, whether it will start affecting the tone of Fox News. I guess if the news readers come on wearing the little veils and whatever they call them on the Arab heads, then we can assume that Fox News is done. But I'd hate to see that, gosh. There was another little thing I found in Nostradamus the other day, which I'm trying to been trying to fit into the Mohammed bin Salman or the General Soleimani thing in Iran situation. Which one of them would do this, if either? Wearing a blue fez, F-E-Z, it's like that Egyptian cap or Turkish cap that the Muslims used to wear about 100 years ago. It says the Antichrist will come in a blue fez if you interpret a particular quatrain that way. So I've been watching to see if MBS, when he gains more power, does wear some kind of a blue headdress or fez or hat or whatever that sets him apart, or if General Qasem Soleimani does the same thing. But he seems to be I haven't seen any signs of that over in Soleimani's territory. And I think MBS is vain enough that he would want to set himself apart and look different and unique, you know. So he could do that. Just another little factor that I have put into my website about the Antichrist profiles. I don't see the Pope wearing a blue fez either, but anyway. Yeah, it troubles me that President Obama's been visiting these countries that President Trump has visited. He's kind of following him around the joint, telling what a bad guy is. That just astounds me.
He's been doing this for the last 10 months, whether it is the trip to the Middle East or his trips to Asia. It is almost like a week to 2 weeks after. Sure enough, Obama is there meeting with some of the same people and world leaders as Trump did. Almost like he's trying to undermine Trump.
You know, I'd have to think that's treasonous. I really would.
I agree. That's crazy.
Climate change. Yep. Interesting point. Oh, actually, while we're talking about Saudi Arabia, let's go to slide 48.
Okay.
This is bound to make somebody mad.
All right, well, let's do it.
Yeah, pull it up.
Okay, the Saudi Arabia cave writings.
Before Islam, when Saudi Arabia was a Jewish kingdom. Now, just read that headline. Blood's got to boil in the Arab nations, I got to tell you.
Before Islam, when Saudi Arabia was a Jewish kingdom, okay.
Now, what that? If you think about it, in the time of Moses in the Exodus, they didn't sit in one spot there in southwestern Saudi Arabia for the whole 40 years. I'm sure they moved around a bit, and portions of the tribes, you know, moved and came back or traveled and traded with the rest of Saudi Arabia. So as time progressed and Israel occupied land of Canaan and made it Israel under Joshua, when King Solomon was born and started to organize things, it's perfectly natural to me that since he was sending the caravans and ships out to get gold and other trade products, that he would have been active in Saudi Arabia. Now, the official archaeological analysis of Saudi Arabia that period says that it couldn't have been part of the Solomonic kingdom because the crime was so rampant. There were gangs and criminals, and you know, disease was rampant in Saudi Arabia, or all of Arabia, the peninsula there. And so it couldn't possibly have been part of the Solomonic kingdom. But if you look into the Arab literature of Arabia, which Lawrence of Arabia did when he was there on the ground, you find that a lot of their legends about the magic and the power of King Solomon came from that era, and they attribute it to King Solomon of Israel and some to Shalman, Esther, the first founder of Asher. But either way, the Solomon influence in the Arab literature is evident, which means that his influence, his kingdom, had strong influence down in Arabia. So I think this article can be given, you know, a couple of marks for yes, I think that's true.
Well, that goes back to what you said, Stan, about, you know, the origins of Saudi Arabia and the history there, and, you know, your research into where the Garden of Eden was and Atlantis speaks to a much more rich history in Saudi Arabia than maybe historians are willing to give credit for. So that's very interesting indeed. And I wanted to ask you about, did you see the news recently about the Roman artifacts found in what was said to be the tomb where Jesus resurrected from?
No, I might have missed that. What did it say?
This was maybe about a week ago, and I will find the article right now, but there were Roman artifacts from the first century excavated from that tomb, putting the actual tomb in the first century under Roman control, where this is the site that is celebrated as where Jesus body was laid and then where he resurrected from. But the Roman artifacts that were found verified the in which this tomb was being used. And it led many to think to say that this even further substantiates the fact that this is the tomb where Jesus was laid to rest.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're still excavating there as well. So,
but watch them find some artifact that would prove, you know, the what would it be, the Merovingian bloodline theory, you know, something like that.
Yeah. You know, I just, as we were talking about the Garden of Eden in addition to this, you'll notice that down where Yemen is on the, if you're looking at Saudi Arabia, it would be down here in this corner at the end of the Red Sea. In Yemen, there is a little volcanic island that's connected to it that has a town in it. And this region is, according to Arabic legend, where I think Adam may have been buried, and maybe Cain, but they call that area of the seaport there the Gulf of Aden, which is Hebrew and Arabic for Eden. So they call that the Gulf of Eden. Now, that adds further support to, by analysis and location of the Garden of Eden up in Tanzania inside the Ngorongoro crater, because I found the huge water, I mean, gazillions of gallons of water flow from that crater, which came up out of the land of Eden around it and shot up in the air and then fell off the side of the volcanic part of the Eden garden, and raced, a lot of it raced downhill through the Great East African Rift, through the Danakil Plains, and then formed a split there at Yemen. So for ancient times to call that the Gulf of Aden, and to claim that they've got buried bodies of Adam and Cain there in the crater, makes me think that I am absolutely correct about the Garden of Eden and the location of it. There are just so many things that keep adding up to this, and it's a natural migration path, you know, in the old days, to go from Northeast Africa straight into Yemen, and for humankind to, you know, from the Garden of Eden time, to migrate into Arabia, where they would be mixed with the fallen ones of Genesis 6, and the hybrid beings would come out of that, and the hybrid animals and stuff, which were an anathema to God. It's all in that area. There's just no question about it.
That's pretty neat, Stan, and I love to see, you know, biblical stories and accounts and sites, you know, verified with current archaeology and studying, and it's great when we get to see things like this be able to be verified, and when you find more evidence to support the theories that you've put together as to where these things are. And you talk about such an area with basically all the history of the world, such a rich history. It's very exciting to be able to look at some of these investigations.
Yeah, I'm talking to one of our friends over there in Arusha, Tanzania, which is about 68 miles off the rim of the Garden of Eden there at Ngoro. And I've asked him to check and see if we can get some sample, you know, dirt from the Eden and from like some of the natural gemstones that occur there, like rubies. You can get little tiny rubies and stuff from them. And some of the tanzanite, which is a blue stone. It's given me an idea to maybe make some kind of a necklace pendant or something for people to wear part of the Garden of Eden and the Eden complex on a gemstone or on a piece of jewelry. We're working on it. I've talked with one of your listeners about it, who, you know, they make jewelry, and to see if we can get that going so we can actually have a piece of the region to wear, you know, and show people as part of a witness tool.
Okay. Very interesting. Speaking of merchandise, your EMP prevention, how's that going?
Actually, we're trying to slow down orders for just a couple of weeks. We're going to catch up with the orders we've gotten now by the weekend, they tell me. I was having a conference call with the staff this morning. And by, you know, if we can kind of limit orders to maybe, you know, a few hundred a day or something like that, that'd be good. We do expect to be able to make and ship out about 2,000 units a week starting the last week of January coming up. It just takes a lot of time to take the building we've leased, put in all the things that we need to pack and make.
Oh,
the
goodness,
circuits.
Yes.
Yeah. Will you?
Yeah.
That's not you, that's me. I think that's me.
Yeah, I know that's you.
Yeah. Somebody from Hawaii calling in. Anyway, the product is doing extremely well. We've had it out in the field now then for about a week. People are giving us feedback on it. And there's so many more things we want to do with this, but this will be our start. And so if your listeners are going to order and using your code and stuff, it's okay. I would hope that if we get too many of them, we'll put the brakes on. You can tell them to slow down for a while because we don't want them waiting 6 weeks to get a product. So anyway.
Well, that's a good problem to have, Steve.
But it is.
It's good to know. It's good to know, and we appreciate the transparency and the honesty about that. But that should tell you that people are taking this seriously.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Look, we've had people that want to resell it in their stores and stuff. You know, 500 units at a time they want to order, and you know, I've said, look, can you just wait to January sometime when we can actually deliver the product to you? It's we've become order takers rather than salesmen of the product. It sells itself.
Well, maybe we can get you some slave labor. Can we call like Cuomo or who do we call for that?
We need qualified labor. You know, we're they've been interviewing a number of people to work on our assembly lines and stuff. And these all have to be, you know, high class electronic people. So
any H-1B visas?
There you go. Oh, sorry about the crass jokes like that. But no, this is now, folks. This is a quality product, and hey, you know, if anyone has any questions about what to give me for Christmas, that'd be cool.
Uh huh.
So life's harder.
Yeah, did a couple of parcels arrive on your doorstep?
Yes, thank you so much. We weren't going to say anything.
Yeah, lovely. Lovely stuff, isn't it?
I just tried it today, and I only had like one bite, but it was delicious. I can't wait sit down.
Here I am in my workstation here, and there's my bottle or box of goodies that Holly got me. It's Wonder Bar. I have to keep it on a ration so I don't run out.
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know. It's just fabulous. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, we're not trying to give a commercial for it, but I just thought you'd enjoy that stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's incredible. It really is.
It's not an EMP shield for your house, or anything, but
it's better comforting. Than that. Yeah, it's comforting. That's right.
So when all the power goes off and the world is dying, you can have your piece of candy there. That's toffee. Right. That's brilliant toffee. I've never eaten anything like it.
You anyway, got that right.
Yeah, back to real stuff. The MH-45 is interesting in that they have found an ancient forbidden Christian text of Jesus' secret teaching to his brother James. And
I read
of
this.
Course, there,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. I forget was it earlier this week or last week? This is just yesterday. Yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been digging up stuff, you know, for a while there and analyzing stuff that they dug up and hadn't deciphered yet. But I don't know whether we could trust the book as, you know, needing to belong.
Yeah, I don't think so. This was apparently it's classic Gnosticism, and
it's from the Nag Hammadi library, which is, it tells you right there it's probably a problem.
Yeah.
It was worth mentioning because they did discover they were talking about it, so at least we know what they're trying to fool us with.
It's definitely
secret teachings, Gnosticism, as you say. It's almost cult-like. It was back then, and that's why they didn't put it in the Bible originally, I think. But, another nasty guy in Jordan, talking about Jordan, slide 50. We have the Jordanian imam saying only the sword will resolve the struggle with the Zionists. Now, this is in Jordan. So he's stirring up bad feelings here against Israel, and I don't know how that mixes with the members of the Bin Salman Arabic Union. I'll have to look here and see if I can just pull up that chart of the Arabic Union. I just took it down, actually, so it's probably here in my records right in front of me here somewhere. Anyway, it tells which members or which Arab states are members of the alliance, which is something we do need to kind of hear. It is. I see it here. It's coming up here. Okay, in the list they have in that military power, MBS does list Jordan. About number 8 on the list that I had up there, and they have pledged a $1.3 billion defense budget, 110,000, nearly 111,000 soldiers, 65,000 reserves, 1,250 tanks, and if you look at how many tanks they have, they got 21,000, so this is maybe 10% of the tank, supplies that MBS has in the Union is being supplied by Jordan. And they're having this big argument with Israel at the moment. So maybe Jordan will get over it and do what MBS wants to do and make a peace treaty with Israel. I don't know. But yeah, that is a good thing to look at to see where Jordan stands, this whole thing. But stirring up war against Israel over that is It's just stupid. It's against the United Arab policies they're trying to form under MBS and his union. You see, with Pakistan being a member of that union under MBS, the union, or particularly Saudi Arabia, has access to nuclear weapons from Pakistan. We don't have to wait for them to build their own reactors in Saudi Arabia and get byproduct fuels for bombs. They can just trade it out with Pakistan or have Pakistan deliver the warheads. So, you know, Iran is, I'm pretty sure they're at the doorstep of nuclear weapons themselves. So we're fast approaching crunch time, the red line, where somebody's got to bomb Iran or stop them. Otherwise, they're going to bomb the Middle East all over the place with their weapons. So you can see why the Arabic Union with Pakistan is a serious threat to Iran and, of course, stability in the region.
And we see the same argument with North Korea. You know, should we launch a preeminent strike against North Korea before they inevitably, you know, take out targets in South Korea or surrounding countries from Japan to parts in the U.S. And you got, you know, both sides of the coin that say yes, you should, and no, you shouldn't, and with their arguments and reasons why. And it's really a tough call. And Iran, too, they're much more secretive about their nuclear program. And I do believe that they're probably more advanced than North Korea, but I have no facts to base that on. That's just what I believe, I guess, based on my own observations. But, you know, you carry out a preemptive strike like that on North Korea and or Iran, and you're going to be really taken to task not only by the citizens of this country, but by the world. For, you know, this hyper aggression that the United States is always blamed for.
All right, with Iran, what would you rate their relationship with Russia? Really solid?
I would say they're allies.
Okay. So if they're allies, and Russia is a nuclear power with a lot of nukes, couldn't Iran just tap into that if they need to?
You would think. Okay.
So bombing Iran and some of their supplies may give you a temporary halt to their threat, but it would only be weeks or months before they could get nuclear arms from Russia and go at it again.
Yeah.
So there's no easy answer to this. There's just no easy answer.
Yeah, but no, we know what you're saying. And it looks like that these issues between nations, these geopolitical issues, seem to only have one solution, and that is war. It seems that it's inevitable that war is going to have to determine, you know, the winners and losers of this battle. And nobody wants that, but, you know, what do you do with a nation like North Korea, you know, who's constantly breaking international laws and putting other people, millions of people, at risk with what they're doing? Yet at the same time, they are isolated. It is a defense mechanism. They have not attacked anybody in over 56 years, so it is just words at this point, until the time when it's not words, and then it's too late. But it's a tough call. I mean, it's a tough situation.
Yeah, it is. What does North Korea have in trade or that we would need to, you know, shut it down? I mean, that we wouldn't want to shut it down. Is there anything really that we would lose financially by North Korea just dropping in a hole by itself?
Slave labor, but I'm not sure that benefits any companies in the United States.
No, realistically,
I'd like to see the people liberated by having the leadership, the oppressive leadership and form of government taken out, but I'm not sure that they would even know what to do if they were liberated. But ultimately, I think that would be the best case scenario.
It would be for them and for the world, for peace in that region. But I really think the major threat to all the nations of the planet is over in the Middle East for oil and water supplies, things like that. North Korea doesn't have a lot of resources that the rest of the world needs. They're just kind of an orphan over in that area after the Korean War was settled. Now, China's kind of sitting on the side, maybe stoking the fire in North Korea. But I think that the whole North Korean thing may be a red herring. To take our eyes off of the Middle East and sending what armaments and ships we need over there to be ready for that conflict. They may both go, I don't know, but I do think that the more serious threat is the Middle East, and of course that's Palestine and Israel at the center of all that. and the disagreement between MBS Sunnis and Soleimani's Shiite regime over there. Dinner was good.
Stan, there's an interesting headline you have on your show images page. DNA reveals the Yeti is actually a bunch of bears.
Interesting.
Yeah. Is this saying that there is no Yeti, that all the evidence from footprints to hair to maybe distant sightings are all from bears?
They limited their report. A scientific team decided to get to the bottom of this in the Himalayas, where it all came from. And they collected a tooth sample from one, you know, and did a DNA test on that, numerous hair samples and some scat from, you know, holy sites around the Himalayas there, where somebody had it stuck up in a wall in a, you know, some little tiny building inside of a mountain, and it was a religious artifact, you know, the hair of the Yeti. And they tested all these things and came up with all of them being that Himalayan, like it's a brown bear. Now, that doesn't explain the beings like that they see in the East Coast in New South Wales and Australia, or the beings that we see reported here in Washington State, some of the wooded areas in the Northwest, or other countries that claim to have a Yeti. So until, I guess, tests are done to actually find Yeti hair and scat and things, that there'll still be that mystery as to, is there a, you know, a Yeti type individual or individuals on the planet? But still, I thought I'd bring that to the forefront to show at least the Himalayan issue is pretty much put to bed. They're brown bears, Himalayan brown bears. Sad to say, but that takes some of the mystery out of it.
I guess so, but yeah, I still, you know, you ever see the, I think there was a police department who put out a, who was feeding the Bigfoot and Yeti conspiracy, who put out a, there was a, I think it was in Georgia, put out a picture, an older picture, saying one of their deputies took the picture, and then you have these shows on TV, which I find really funny, you know, the hunt for Bigfoot, and it's, you know, season after season of 10 to 15 episodes of them always just like right on the cusp of finding or photographing Bigfoot, never to be found. But, you know, we can still hope that they're out there. But more likely than not, they're probably bears. They're probably
This is going to go a long way to one of my more highly profiled detractors saying that
you've hunted for Bigfoot, haven't you?
Yeah, I hunted for Bigfoot. Something to that effect.
With your PI equipment out in the woods?
Yeah, that's what I've done. Okay, so some moron out there, but I digress. All right.
Did he say you'd done that, did he?
It's a she, and she's struggling for relevance. And, yeah, something that I somehow was looking for Bigfoot or Sasquatch. I don't recall the exact phrase, but it was so moronic I couldn't even respond to it. But
I can't believe you'd be that bored to go after that.
But yeah, I got the time. I got the time. Yeah.
Look at slide 55. We're running close to our deadline here. Slide 55 is Holly's photo of the day on our main website, standeo.com. You can click and see that there. But it's interesting in that these prophecies are coming from a number of Christian sources and dreams and visions they've had about four events coming to America. The back-to-back hurricanes, we've had that. Tremendous earthquakes, the first striking the Pacific Northwest, followed immediately by the big one hitting California. That hasn't happened yet, but that's what they've seen. And then a massive tsunami hits the East Coast, inundating New York, and last, most disturbingly, an invasion of America and war coming to our land. Now, Dimitri Dudeman said that a long time ago, that the Lord showed him that there was going to be an invasion here of the United States. And from what he said, I saw that it was mainly like Russians and possibly Chinese involved in that. But it is worth going and reading the link I put there on that page, or you can get it on our website live if you go to the image of the day, photo of the day, whatever it's called now. But it is kind of interesting that we're seeing little, when I say little, maybe 4.5 earthquakes up in the north part of the Juan de Fuca plate this week, and more activity along the New Madrid Fault, and even in the Tennessee Mountains. I forget what they're called. What are the mountains of Tennessee called? Do you remember?
Appalachian.
I thought it might be
but Smoky
I
Mountains. Another,
Smoky no, Mountains.
Smoky right. Mountains. All right.
Smoky's been having a few small quakes. So we're starting to see some increased activity, in my opinion, on the fault lines that we know are seismic prone, and they're on the edge and west of the craton of the United States, which is the stable part of the United States. Those of us who are unfortunate enough to live outside the craton stable region, the blue region I had up on the website, are going to expect earthquakes. And even here in Colorado, I mean, we've had them south of us for some time, but we've now had one that was west of us. So a lot of us are going to see a shakeup. And I said to Holly, don't worry, because the big one hitting California, well, it'll just be the mountains we live by. She said that's good because she likes to see. So,
wow.
I'm being flippant, but these things are definitely judgments coming.
Yes.
And that East Coast tsunami could very well be something happening over the Canaries with the Cumbre de Vieja volcano there.
We've been talking about that or looking at that for a long time.
Is that the one that's erupting right now?
I don't know. Kim hasn't sent me a note.
There's one in Asian Pacific that is erupting.
Yeah, they've got people who get down there as quick as they can. If you see the videos of the plume coming out of that, you would run too.
It's been going on for days. They got some live cams that folks you can watch to see the progression of that.
Hmm.
We've also got some quakes in an interesting part of North Island, New Zealand too, to the west of Lake Taupo, which will erupt at some point in the future, I'm pretty sure. So is their USGS version, the GNS down there.
Hmm.
Oh boy!
Well, are you taking us to the end?
Yeah.
Are we? Yeah. Okay.
We're at the end. So, Stan, we want to thank you for everything, for being part of the program, and you're such a valuable asset, information, just incredible stuff. You're on top of everything from the Earth changes to space weather to geopolitics, and we love spending the time with you, and of course, you and Holly.
Well, Don't forget Bigfoot.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Guys, it's great to be with you again.
Okay. Well,
Lord willing, we'll see you next week. Okay?
Let's make it a date, obviously. And folks, Stan Dale, Dare to Prepare. Look, Christmas is coming. You've got a multitude of Christmas options from StanDale.com. Dare to Prepare, the lecture series from Stan Dale. Cosmic Conspiracy. I mean, you got all sorts of options. And don't forget about the EMP device, the EMP protective device as well. Just go to HagmanReport.com and click on the link there. Stan, thank you so very much. And God bless you and Holly and the little ones as well.
You bet. God bless
all right.
you. Night, night, guys.
Good night. That'll do it for us tonight. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for your belief and trust in us and your support of our endeavors. We want to thank Jake Mifornius, thank you so much for
End Times News Report on YouTube.
Yeah, it was a great hour that we spent together. Until tomorrow, God bless.